Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me, as always, Tim Dennis. Tim.
Yeah.
Today we are joined by a fellow Minnesotan to talk. How funny is this, right? We're working in the same state, but this is what's going to take us to look to the skies together. Somebody that has a unique perspective in a brand new book, The Space Pen Club, Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, UFO Disclosure, Consciousness, and Other Mind Zoomers. The book is out and available. We have a link for it in today's program guide, so you can find it. Joining us today is Martin Keller. Mr. Keller, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Hey, guys, my fellow Minnesotans and long-suffering Vikings fans, I assume.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, we are. Well, you know, we're probably closer to alien disclosure than we are a Super Bowl, but at least there's hope on both fronts, right?
Well, I'll give you that one.
Very cool. Well, let's get to know a little bit about you, if you don't mind. Obviously, you know, being right here in our backyard, I'm fascinated to find out where your interest in this all began.
Well, a couple of things. I have always been interested in outer space since I was a kid. I was the kind of kid that wrote to NASA for whatever they had on the early space programs, and they sent me back different program notes from Gemini, Mercury, and Apollo, plus autographed photos of the astronauts. When John Glenn did his three orbits, I wrote to him. I got a letter back from his office and then a personalized autographed photo, which is actually in the book. I found out later in writing the book that Glenn was actually interested in the whole UFO topic, according to Senator Harry Reid from Nevada, and which tells me he probably had some observations while in space, or he knew of stories from other astronauts in the early space program. So, but in addition to that, that outer space interest as a baby boomer kid, I also had a couple of sightings in high school with high school friends of mine. The first one was rather disturbing, and I write about it pretty much in detail in the book. We were on our way to a student council meeting one night, middle of February, cold night. And we were walking through a park, which was actually a butte, probably the high point out there in Dickinson, North Dakota, which is close to the Badlands and the Montana, North Dakota state line. And a red object, spherical object about the size of a ping pong ball, came down from the top of the butte and kind of hovered in front of us at about 10 feet away. We didn't know what it was. We didn't know what to make of it. My friend Jim, who's also known as Zod in the book, there's a good backstory there about why he is named Zod, but he says, "What is this?"
Okay.
And, I, And I said, I don't know, it's the devil, you know, because it was red, and we were good Catholic boys, and I think the thing eventually just vanished, because although neither one of us has a recollection of how that episode ended, and we continued on our way to school that night, and then a few days later, there was an object spotted outside of our high school. This one was about 30 feet in diameter, oval-shaped, and just hovered over the edge of town, which is where my high school was at that point. And there had been a lot of UFO sightings in that part of the state that were reported in the media, broadcast, television, and radio, and local newspapers. So, and we, you know, religiously read the UFO rags that were available back then. I think there were two publications that you could read. So I've always been interested in the subject. I went off to college. I didn't think much about it. And then in the early 90s, some strange things started to happen in my house that renewed my interest in it. So there's a long answer to a short question.
Well, take us back to having that experience, seeing something. Obviously, it's of the devil, whatever it is, because of your religious upbringing. But do you remember any other aspects of that sighting? Do you remember sounds?
The red orb?
Yes. Anything else that would light up? No.
Completely silent. And, you know, this is where I have to issue a spoiler alert, because in the fall of 1992, five little spherical objects appeared in my bedroom at 4:03 in the morning. And I asked sort of rhetorically in the book, are these the same objects that were like the one we saw in the park? And that's an unanswered question. I've never really been able to satisfactorily know what these things are. I mean, I poked around in my travels throughout the UFO ghetto, the UFO community, and I would always, you know, run these anecdotes by people. And I know one well-respected researcher from Puerto Rico, Jorge Martin, said right away, oh, those are the grays, they're shapeshifters. So I don't know how he knows it, but I do share that comment of his in one of the later chapters. And there were, however, some residual effects from the ones in the bedroom at 4:03 in the morning, and I go into quite a bit of detail about that, some physical and I guess emotional malaise. I mean, I felt like all my willpower had been zapped for about 24 to 36 hours after this episode. And, you know, a high strangeness event that still remains unclassified or undefinable. And it's something I think about often, like, what really was this and what is it about? And that's just one of the episodes that I've experienced in this unexpected journey I've been on.
Well, we mentioned Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind. Can you break down for us what that means, each one of the different levels from 1 to 5?
Well, Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind was an initiative started by Dr. Stephen Greer at the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence. Acronym that's used pretty commonly is CSETI, not to be confused with SETI, the guys that look for ETs and using radio signal telescopes, etc. Close encounter terminology was coined by Dr. J. Allen Hynek. I think he was at the University of Chicago or Northwestern, one of the big university colleges. He was an astronomer, and he coined the terminology back, I think, in the 60s. And the first kind was just observation of objects at a distance. Second kind was there's trace elements, like of a landing, burnt foliage, stuff like. Close encounters of the third kind, which is probably the most commonly known in our culture thanks to the Spielberg film of the same name. That was sightings of humanoids on board the craft, and a close encounter of the fourth kind was interaction with occupants of these vehicles, and then close encounter of the fifth kind is human-initiated contact that Dr. Greer developed using three distinctive protocols or modalities, light, audio, and a mind component, remote viewing, if you will, and also vectoring in these craft using a technique he called coherent thought sequencing. And just to give you a little context, I first met Greer in the early 90s. I came in to his orbit, if you will, writing a freelance story about him and see SETI because I thought it was intriguing. It kind of renewed an interest in ufology that I hadn't had since I went off to college. And when he described this, I just thought, well, this could be the next phase of ufology, and I think that's proven to be true. I haven't seen anyone come up with anything above and beyond the CE5 initiative or the protocols used in that. And then when I couldn't get the story published, I mean, I could have published it anywhere once the internet was around and there were any number of outlets, but, you know, mainstream media was pretty buttoned down on this subject. It was pretty much marginalized and a sort of a joke, really, among a lot of the media outlets back in the 90s.
Right.
So I couldn't publish it, and I'd been doing work in public relations as a profession, and I just said, you know, I could probably help your organization and get you wider exposure than just placing an article. So if you're interested, I'll do PR work for you. And a lot of the book is based on those 5 or 6 years where I was active with Greer and Steve SETI in different locations. And so that's the close encounters part of it.
Do you feel that you've been targeted for a specific reason, or do you think that the people that have these encounters are completely randomized?
Well, that's a really good question, and it's one that I have a hard time answering personally, because when I look back at the experiences that are recollected in the Space Pen Club book, and when friends who aren't all that familiar with this discussion hear me talk about it or read the book, they say, you know, you've got a pattern of interactions with some kind of phenomenon and throughout your entire life. And I guess I have to admit on the record, yes, that's true. You know, I have a hard time saying the word contactee without kind of smiling or feeling cynical, but I may in fact be that. I just think there's so many things that are non-conclusive about what constitutes a real ET, you know, and what separates it from other sort of spectral phenomena that's out there.
Well, let me ask, you said you may be a contactee, but if you've had things in your room, you have moments of lost time, what do you consider that to be, if not a contactee?
Well, I don't know. I mean, are little red orbs ETs? Are big spaceships ETs from another planet? Well, there's no definitive science or guidance on this. I think a lot of this is purely speculative at some point, at least for me personally. I think part of the problem in the whole world of ufology is that no one's really agreed on the basic terms as to what constitutes an extraterrestrial or a UFO or UAP, as they're now being called, unidentified aerial phenomena. But I've definitely had some high strangeness events in my life, and before I get any older, I thought I would recollect them in this book, because I know everyone's not had these experiences. And, you know, in the prologue, I say, I was in the UFO closet for now, but I'm now, you know, with this book, I'm out of it.
Well, have you had the chance or considered hypnotherapy to see if you can reclaim any of the memories of what happened that night that you first saw the UFO, since you and your friend both have no recollection of how things ended that evening?
I've been hypnotized once by Dr. Richard Haynes from NASA Ames. Dick Haynes is fairly well known in this world and has worked with a lot of alleged abductees out on the West Coast. And he was also a close advisor to C. SETI during the 90s. And in the chapter that's set in Arizona, I think it's chapter 8, it's called Hypnotized in the Land of the Kachinas. We were doing a C. SETI event, a weekend workshop where we would do, Greer would do his lectures during the day, and then at night we'd do a sky watch and employ some of these CE5 protocols that I referred to earlier. And I had talked to Dick Haynes about the experience the day after it happened initially, and I was never satisfied with his observation of it. He said it was most likely a hypnagogic experience, which is a new realm of consciousness that parapsychologists and others are studying. And I did as much I did as much reading on that as I could, and I was never didn't really seem to fit my situation. So he offered to hypnotize me out in Arizona at night as we were wrapping up. I said, sure, you know, that might be a good way to approach this. And we got back to our hotel room, and from about 2 to 3 in the morning, hypnotic process, we looked at that episode, and there was a lot of not denial, but maybe avoidance in really trying to figure out what these were. And, you know, my breathing got labored, and I'd be willing to do it again, especially my friend and I have often talked about doing it again and just try to explore, you know, to get a satisfactory answer to what exactly happened and what the purveyor of the experience was.
Well, let me ask you this, as you still seem to be straddling somewhat of the skeptical line of exactly what experiences you've had or what they mean, since there's no direct definition for these experiences, what would be an acceptable answer for you, knowing that hypnotherapy, although very popular and widespread, is still somewhat considered, you know, fringe to a lot of the mainstream? What would you glean from it that would make you feel like, okay, this definitely lets me know? I mean, are you just looking for the confirmation that, yes, Martin Keller, you had an extraterrestrial encounter? Or would you be as equally happy to have Martin Keller, you did not, you know, like a Maury Povich moment? You are not the alien abductee. What would be a good defining moment for you?
Well, I guess it could go with either decision. It's getting there that I think presents a challenge. As you pointed out, hypnotherapy, especially in the wrong hands, can be really misused or abused. Although Dr. Haynes is quite accomplished at it. I would probably go back to him if I were to do it again. I think if there is a solid, conclusive statement about what exactly I experienced, I would surely welcome that.
And that's, well, when you were going through the hypnotherapy, how cognizant of it are you? I mean, do you remember the questions? Do you remember being led there? Or was it almost like your abduction? You remember laying down, having him walk you backwards from 10, and then you wake up and him telling you, yeah, we don't have anything conclusive here.
No, you're, to my surprise, you're aware of just about everything that's transpiring during the session. In fact, a good friend of mine that I'd met in CSETI, Howard Schachter, was in the room with us, and at one point I noticed Howard falling asleep and doing some light snoring, which, you know, was actually pretty funny, but it didn't break the hypnotic moment, if you will. I could hear all the questions. I knew all the questions. Haynes and I both taped the episode. And so, no, I guess, you know, you're well aware of everything that's transpiring, but you okay. are in kind of a state removed from it as well.
Well, the reason I ask that is, you know, we've spoken to many people, and it never really occurred to me to ask that. And as a follow-up, did you feel that the hypnotherapist led you at all? As you look back at it now with kind of 2020 hindsight, do you feel, you know, with his conclusion, do you feel that it was because perhaps that's how he walked you through it? Or was it a very open-ended type of conversation where he just opened the conversation, you were able to fill in the gaps on your own without being led down any pathway?
Yeah, I didn't feel there were any leading questions. The only one that Dick Haynes asked early on was, think back to your childhood growing up. Did you ever meet any people who were maybe really strange or strange looking? I thought that was the only leading question. And I said, no, I've never met any people like that. I think the inference was that, have you met any ETs face to face? And,
That's a loaded question to a Minnesota Vikings fan. If you've ever been to a Packer game, I'm sure you've run into many strange individuals at a Packers game, but are they aliens? We can't answer that for certain. Right. Okay. So that was really the only leading aspect. Do you remember ever having that instance then? Do you remember, you know, there, now that I think of it, you know, there was this giant owl that would stand outside my window at night. Was there any kind of trigger like that when you were in the hypnotherapy session?
No, but I'll tell you, and this is detailed in the book pretty closely in that chapter 8, going into the hypnosis, in my mind's eye, I saw three strange-looking figures. I think I actually described them as kind of Ren and Stimpy cartoon-like figures who were staring at me, and I didn't mention it at first, but as we got further into the process, and Dr. Haynes asked me, so how are you doing? I said, I'm doing good, but I gotta tell you, since we started this, I've been seeing these three figures in my mind's eye, and he asked me to describe them, and I did, and he says, well, they're not going to harm you, and they'll go away at some point, which they actually did once we got it deeper into the hypnosis. But I'll tell you, coming out the other side of the hypnotic process, I had a really unusually calm sense of peace. And I don't know if that was maybe cathartic in some fashion, but I mean, it was very relaxing, I guess, to have undergone that.
Well, walk me back again for a second then. As you're going through this and he asks and you say you're seeing these two characters, does he seem surprised to you that you've seen them?
No, it was three characters, and he doesn't, you know, Dick doesn't betray any emotion or mislead during his process. He pretty much let me describe them and said, well, they're not going to harm you, and they'll go away at some point, and they pretty much did almost within that instance. So
that seems almost like in his stating of that, you know, I guess there's two ways to look at it. Did he then just give you the hypnotic suggestion, they'll go away, therefore they went away? Or are there these guardians, these gatekeepers when doing this that he often encounters, these two or three beings that are there? So he's used to that. Did you ever question him regarding that aspect of the session?
Well, he asked me when I had described them for the first time to him during the process. He says, "What do you think they want?" And I said, "I don't think they want me talking about this," which I don't know if that was purely voluntarily on my part, because at that point I had read quite a bit of so-called abduction literature, and I know a lot of people who have had these experiences have said that under hypnosis or otherwise that you know, ETs don't want to have their interaction shared with third parties. So, you know, that's a good question, but I think that's a better question for Dr. Haynes, for him to answer than me.
All right, fair enough. Now, you have these experiences. How many times do you believe you've been in the company of high strangeness, as you put it, since we can't define if it was alien or a craft or something else altogether? How many times do you believe you've been in their presence?
I've never done a finger count of them, but I would say, you know, half dozen to 10 times maybe, including, and this is in the book too, a daylight episode witnessed by another friend of mine, Kevin Foley, who had worked in the Clinton administration, or at least on their first campaign. He was an event organizer. And he traveled with me to the first Star Knowledge conference out in Marty, South Dakota, on the Lakota reservation out there. And about 90 minutes away from that destination, middle of the day, I mean, it was just after lunch, I was driving and Kevin was in the passenger seat. Clear blue sky like there is today in Minnesota, we both looked out my side of the car out into the sky, and there suddenly was a white arrow pointing in the direction of the Star Knowledge conference where we were headed, and we almost went off the road. We were both so startled to see it. Very basic looking arrow, you know, with the arrowhead and the shaft at the back and the straight line connecting. And, you know, we had video cameras and good photographic equipment on board, and we didn't think for once to record it, but we both saw it, and in fact we still talk about it today, like, what the hell is this about? I mean, we saw an unidentified flying arrow, and it vanished as quickly as it appeared. But then at the conference, and I didn't see this because I couldn't get outside quick enough because so many people were rushing outside to see it. There had been a chanting and drumming exercise out on the front lawn where this conference was being held at a local high school. And everyone was in a circle, and then above them in the sky, a white circle formed overhead. Now, is that the ETs? Is that some sort of spiritual dimension manifesting? I mean, these are the types of unknown issues or high strangeness episodes that you know, where do you go for the conclusive answer? I think, you know, it was pretty interesting to see both. I didn't see the white circle, but Kevin did. So,
well, and in that defense, I will say I went to the Eseti Ranch, ECETI.org for people that are interested. That's the ranch where I had my UFO encounters. And we were there, I think it was like over the 4th of July weekend. It was some weekend like that. They were doing a big festival. And I mentioned to James Gilliland, the gentleman that ran the property, I said, it looks like clouds are forming. We're not going to be able to see the sky tonight. And he very confidently just smiled at me and said, "Oh, no, I've talked to our friends. They're going to keep it clear over my property." And I remember thinking, yeah, okay, James. And I'll be damned, Martin, I'll tell you, hand to God, the clouds were thick and everywhere except this huge punched out circle above his property. We watched things happen all night long, and as the night progressed and more people went to sleep, this hole continued to get smaller until there were probably five or six of us left. And I remember this moment like it just happened. We're all looking up, and I'm like, it's incredible how this hole has just slowly filled in as less people are giving attention to the sky. And we all looked down, and we talked for a second, and we looked up, and the sky was completely filled. So none of us watched that hole seal up. But the moment we turned our attention away from it and we said, well, this has been crazy. Maybe it's time to call it a night. We look up, and boom, there's no sky. It's all clouds. It was one of the most unusual experiences. So again, you're right. Was our intention keeping the cloud cover clear? Were the aliens keeping the cloud cover clear? I can't exactly tell you what took place, but it was certainly of high strangeness. I think that's the best way to put it.
The guy out in Oregon, right?
Yes.
Shasta. Yeah.
Yep. Mount Adams, I believe, is the dormant volcano by him. But it is one of the most unusual locations I've ever had a chance to visit in my lifetime, and certainly has never let me down any of the times we've been there.
That's on my high strangeness bucket list. So
definitely make sure go out. Now, for listeners, I just want you to know, you know, James is pretty open, or at least has been in the past, of if you know, just showing up, and I think there's a small fee or donation fee to be out on the property, and if you want to camp there and so on. So be aware of that. But a couple of things, you know, his claim has always been, on a clear night, you have a 90 to 95% chance of seeing things, which is enticing, but make sure that you're going in a waning moon. You don't want to go when there's a full moon in the sky and it's bright, because that washes out much of the sky.
Yep.
Go when the, you know, either a new moon when there's nothing out there, you know, the moon is gone, or you've got just a sliver of it in the sky. And I guarantee you, you're going to see, first of all, one of the most amazing views of the night sky you will ever encounter in your life. But more importantly, that's every time we had an experience, it was during that period. So if you're going to go visit, make sure that you go when there's very little moon to be seen. You've obviously had an interest in this. Do you find that there's a high level of this interaction that takes place in our great state of Minnesota as well? Or are we one of the lesser visited areas?
That's a good question, too. I mean, I can probably only respond to it by saying I only know what I read in the newspaper and hear on the news about different UFO sightings, and there's been some dramatic ones. I think there was one with the law enforcement guy. I can't remember what part of the state, but there was just an anniversary occasion of that.
Right.
I think in the
last couple years. Yeah, the UFO actually flew over, and the car is still on display, but as it flew over and passed his car, it bent the antenna. It like melted and bent the antenna. I think broke the glass. It was really a very strange deal. And Tim, do you remember where that is now? Is it Reamer, Minnesota?
Reamer, yeah.
Yeah. Reamer, Minnesota, and they still have it on display there. They're, you know, they talk about it kind of tongue in cheek, and the police officer, I mean, tongue in cheek to a sense, because they can't definitively say this is a UFO, but they know that this is what attracts people to their area to visit. But the officer who had the encounter has stopped giving interviews regarding it. There are interviews out there you can find online, but if you just Google, folks, UFO REMER Minnesota, you'll find information about this, and you can find videos of him describing and talking about that case. But I know we've attended, Tim and I have been to a few of the different MUFON meetings in the Twin Cities area through our 15 years.
Yeah, I was going to say MUFON would probably have a good historical record of Minnesota sightings that they've investigated.
Now, I noticed that on the write-up for your book, you actually spoke to a gentleman that was integral in introducing Prince to our world, and he had a UFO experience as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, really dramatic sighting. The guy you're talking about is Owen Husney, who discovered Prince and signed him to his record deal with Warner Brothers, which was kind of unheard of at a time. I mean, Prince was only 17 or 18 years old, and he managed to negotiate a great deal for Prince, where he could produce, record, and publish, you know, all the songs on the, on those first five albums for Warner Brothers. Owen's sighting was out near Hutchinson toward dusk. He was out kind of on a day trip with his fiance at the time, Connie, and they were playing a classical music disc, and it kept, the CD player kept kind of spritzing or, you know, cutting out, and Owen thought that the that he was being targeted for us in some kind of speed trap. He thought it was like a radar gun and was scrambling his CD, the quality of his CD player. And at one point he says, why doesn't this effing cop just pull out and bust me? And then he said, right at, you know, shortly thereafter, all of a sudden, about 30 feet above their car, a large object, approximately 30, 35 feet in diameter, just silently went across in front of them and disappeared off into the distance. And you know, it freaked him out because he didn't, he said, I never thought of the subject. It was never on my radar, my personal radar. It was, I had no interest in it. And it pretty much startled him. Whereas his fiance Connie just matter-of-factly said, oh, it's a flying saucer. And, he called the police when they got back to Minneapolis and said, were there some, have you guys had any reports of weather balloon sightings out around Hutchinson? And the cop said, number one, nobody uses weather balloons anymore. It's all radar driven. And number two, there were some UFO reports out around Hutchinson, including one made by the local police. So, pretty interesting thing. But then Owen had a subsequent event in his house 2 to 3 years after that experience, where at about 4 a.m, all the lights came on in his house. And first he thought, number one, he felt like maybe I was having a heart attack. I think that's his first thought about this, because he said, I could feel like electricity surging through my body, and then all the lights came on. And my second thought, according to Mr. Husney, was that I immediately flashed back on the UFO sighting around Hutchinson from a couple years ago, and it's like they were reminding me that of that, and it was almost like, you know, we know where you live. I don't know. It's a great story. It's a strange story, but it's no stranger than anything else that you'll find in the world of ufology.
All right, let's do this. We have to take a quick break. We'll come back. The book again is The Space Pen Club: Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, UFO Disclosure, Consciousness, and Other Mind Zoomers. We have a link for the book on today's program guide. Make sure you get that. Rate and review the book as well. We'll be back with Martin Keller right after this.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome back to the program. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hey guys, we are closing in. Remember, on September 10th, The Curse of Lizzie Borden airs on Discovery Plus and Discovery Plus UK. Make sure you tune in and join me along with medium Chris Fleming, Sam Beltrusis, and Luann Jolly as we investigate the murder site from the Borden murders that took place. It is one of the most compelling investigations I've been a part of and certainly opened my horizons to a whole new experience. I hope you guys will check that out. September 10th, please watch it as soon as it comes out so that they know that you guys are out and supporting your buddy Darkness Dave. And who knows, maybe you'll see me on some more of these amazing shock docs that they're promoting and premiering on Travel Channel and Discovery Plus. Today, we're talking with our guest, Martin Keller. His book, The Space Pen Club, Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, UFO Disclosure, Consciousness, and Other Mind Zoomers. Let's ask real quickly, Martin, disclosure. Is this truly a disclosure that's going on around us, or is there something else? Is this a hype game for PR for the military, for the United States, in a way to kind of flex and show the rest of the world what we're really capable of, all hiding it under the guise of potential UFO activity?
Well, that's a great question, and I think a short answer is it's both, at least to my thinking. The report that came out on June 25th from the Department of Defense and one of the intelligence agencies was only 9 pages long. It was a huge disappointment for people who were really expecting a real disclosure on this topic. But I think the most positive thing to come out of that was the run-up to this report, the media coverage on this. It was like a tsunami. I mean, it was a complete sea change in terms of how media reviews this subject. You know, those Navy pilot Tic Tac videos, as they're now being called, I think really convinced people in the media who were, you know, trained professionally to be skeptics and distance themselves from the things they cover. I mean, I think that turned a lot of heads. Some of these pilot statements and subsequent articles in the New York Times and elsewhere, CNN, et cetera, has really created a new climate, at least where people now accept the fact like, oh, UFOs are real, and maybe this whole thing about we're being visited or surveilled or both is a possibility. And to me, that's the most exciting thing. I'm very cynical about the government's ultimate intentions. I've read several analysis by people who follow this topic fairly closely, and they're saying mostly that it has to be portrayed as a threat so that they can get funding for it through all the proper military channels, although certainly if you know anything about the secrecy in regarding the subject, the black budget apparently has been funding these things for decades, going back probably to the first atomic bomb explosion, the beginning of the atomic age. So we're in a disclosure climate, but we're also in a climate where the ET presence is being portrayed as a threat, and I don't think that's a good thing. And it'll be very interesting to see how it plays out. There's two chapters, the two concluding chapters in the book, 9 and 10, deal pretty extensively on the disclosure issue. Dr. Greer and C. Setti had a very small disclosure event in Washington, D.C. in April of 1997, and then Greer went really big in 2000. Is it 2000 or 2001 with his National Press Club event that had, I forget how many witnesses, but all of the witness testimony now is available online and in DVDs and books. And that was a pretty compelling event. I wasn't involved with the organization at that point, but I was there during the first one in Washington. We had some very compelling witnesses, and including the assistance of Dr. Ed Mitchell, Apollo astronaut, sixth man to walk on the moon, who I somehow recruited to join C. Setti. And I get into that, how that happened in the book as well. But that's a good question. I think, you know, I'd be curious to hear what your perspective is on it.
You know, we've been talking about it, of course, for years on the show, and more so since this report. And Tim, I think, has been more of the mind that it's definitely more military might, and that it's most likely terrestrial craft that we've, you know, created. I've started to buy more into the concept that I think the report itself was a flex to Russia and China by telling them, hey, we've examined this, and, you know, we know it's not Russia. We know it's not China. Boy, we don't know what this could be. To me, that feels very soft threat, as though, hey, guys, we know it's not you. So if it's not the two other biggest superpowers out there, you can be sure we own the skies, and you better think twice about what you want to do going forward, because we've got things that you don't even understand at this point. So I'm starting to believe that there's a lot more to that aspect. Do I believe that we have been visited? Yes. Because there are too many stories going back too far that are well documented, when there were not flying craft in the sky. You know, that I believe that we are being visited. I just don't know to what level and if it's continued. And that's kind of where I sit on this. But again, speaking to people like you who have had strange encounters, you brought up a good point, though. What are these things? Are these the aliens, or are they something else? Is it interdimensional? Is it maybe a drone that they've sent forward to you know, as a scout to look over these things? And is it a drone from us, or is it a drone from somewhere out there? I'm still kind of uncertain on all of it.
Yeah, I think from the reading I've done, the people I've talked to who follow this pretty closely, it's pretty apparent that we have vehicles. I think we've had anti-gravity vehicles since the 50s. I think we successfully reverse engineered some of these crashed objects. What are they called? Reproductive vehicles, ARVs, aerial reproductive vehicles. I think that's the acronym. I might be wrong on that, but a lot of sightings might be attributable to those military stealth craft that are in the skies. But I keep thinking back to the Navy pilot on, I think it was 60 Minutes, or one of the pilots that were interviewed back here in the last year or so, who said, we saw these things routinely out over the Atlantic Ocean every day. I mean, that right there should be grounds for open public congressional hearings, which are rumored to be in the works. Again, I'm cynical about how it will be portrayed or discussed, because I know that, you know, the military needs a next enemy, and the next enemy could be the ETs, and that was pretty much stated by Wernher von Braun on, you know, as he started to leave this planet on his deathbed. He told his assistant Carol Rosen, and she's part of the disclosure process that CSETI's been involved in. And von Braun said that this will be the ultimate card that the military plays. They'll hoax an alien event to convince everyone that these things are a threat from space. And I think to date there's been no net hostile intention on their part. I mean, you can find one or two incidences in the UFO literature, but generally it's pretty benign interactions with humans, although people that have been abducted claim they have been abducted will tell you that this, you know, this is not a benign encounter. But there's also a good flip side to that, as Dr. Greer likes to point out, and he was an emergency room physician in Asheville, North Carolina, and he says, you know, we do things in the ER every day that people might think are terribly wrong and terrifying, but if you have an alien race that is surveilling the planet and needs to sample the health of its population, and they take you on board and run some tests to get data, you know, ultimately the things we did in the ER saved people's lives, even though they might have found it terrifying. He said, I think the same scenario could exist here with the ET side of it, the ET perspective.
That is definitely an interesting perspective to try to assimilate, right? Is what they're doing going to help us in the long run? You know, I mean, there's all these theories that the visitors are here to help us in the next evolution of life, or perhaps even to help protect this planet. Where do you fall on that concept?
Well, I come back to something I heard the brilliant attorney, public affairs attorney, Danny Sheehan, said on a Canadian podcast in the run-up to this report. There was a panel discussion that I watched online, and Sheehan made a very interesting point. And I guess for listeners who don't know Sheehan's credentials, he was played instrumental legal role in things like Watergate, the Pentagon Papers, Karen Silkwood case, Iran-Contra, Wounded Knee. Got a long list of public policy litigation and work, and turns out he's also had a lifelong interest in the UFO discussion. In fact, he wrote a classified briefing document for President Carter, and was also the consulate for the Jesuits, and had heard about the Vatican having a secret library dedicated to this issue, and trying to get into that library through different contacts he had over there. And every time the word was no, Daniel, you're never going to get into this library, so stop asking. But anyway, Sheehan, during this podcast recently, brought up a really good point about the close encounters of the fourth kind cases that he had read that had been vetted pretty clearly by experts. He said there's two messages that the ETs always have with their contactees, and the first is get rid of nuclear weapons, because they're not just bad for you and the planet, but they're bad for us and in outer space. And number two is, your planet is environmentally collapsing. You need to take drastic measures to turn this around, because this is a really beautiful planet. It's a special planet, apparently. in the galaxy or the galaxies, and that resonated with me really strongly. I think that's where I am on that. I think that's exactly where this discussion needs to be going forward.
You talk about other mind zoomers in the title of the book. Can you give us a taste of a couple of things in your new book, The Space Pen Club?
Well, I should probably give some context to what, you know, where mind zoomers originated.
Please, yes.
And the Space Pen Club. There really is a Space Pen Club. In fact, we're meeting tonight online at, I think it's 6 o'clock. The Space Pen Club was a kind of an ad hoc organization of college classmates up at St. John's University in the 70s. And one of my classmates found a space pen in the college bookstore where he worked, the first pen to write in space made by the Fisher Space Pen Company out in Nevada. They've been around for almost 60 years now. They have a huge line of space pens. They're really a feat of engineering. They also write underwater and outer space and across grease surfaces. Anyway, he brought it back to the dorms, and, you know, it was kind of a joke at first, and then it became this sort of iconic writing tool that we formed a club around, the Space Pen Club. And at least for me personally, it represented self-exploration, cosmic consciousness and communication, transcendence, and the occasional quest for beer, girls, tunes, and controlled substances. But
sign Tim and I up. How do we get into this club? We need one.
Well, seriously, though, our founder, our sort of accidental founder, Denny Lynch, really thought that the space pen represented possibilities. And I think the whole UFO discussion presents some wonderful possibilities. What if we'd had a real UFO, you know, a real disclosure about what these things are and why they're here? What if we had established diplomatic ties with, you know, other galaxies and different civilizations? You know, what are the implications? The possibilities are unlimited. And I knew when I first started writing this book 10 years ago that the Space Pen Club would be the name of the book, and also the heart and soul of the book. And really, at the end of the day, anybody that's interested in this subject or had experiences or high strangeness events and is seeking to find the answers, you're in the club, whether you know it or not, and there's no membership.
Dues. Well, now getting into mind zoomers, what can you tell us about that?
Well, I think that relates back to the whole issue of consciousness, and throughout the book there's a narrative about consciousness and what the implications or possibilities are about that. The mind, the powers of the mind, the implications of the mind to do things, you know, whether it's psi related or parapsychological. That's really what I'm referring to as other mind zoomers. I mean, the Space Pen Club had two events every year at school: Peak with the Lead and the Rites of Spring, and the invitation one year came out to everyone in the dorms as "Bring Your Own Mind Zoomers." And I'll just leave it to your listeners' imaginations to figure out what those
okay.
might have been. Come on, it was the mid-70s, you know. There were a lot of things that people were doing in college, experimenting with in terms of mind expansion. But, you know, the whole UFO discussion, as far as Steve Greer is concerned at CSETI, is focused on the imperatives of consciousness and how that relates to the ETs, and how it creates equal footing between these what appear to be vastly superior civilizations, coming here in some form or another, and humans such as we are. But, you know, Greer's whole thing about consciousness was based on the fact that he believes that these craft and probably the occupants have these acute technological abilities to read human thought, that it's perceptible to them in ways that we haven't been able to really develop yet. There's an epigram that I use in the Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind chapter that I want to read. It was written by Colonel John Alexander, a PhD, in his book UFOs, Myths, Conspiracies, and Realities. Alexander says, "We agree that at times hard physical craft exist, but there's much more to the phenomena. Unfortunately, the true boundaries are unknown, but it seems certain that human consciousness is at least part of the formula." And I think when you look at some of the cases in ufology, like there was a big sighting in Indiana, I think back in the 60s, where traffic was stopped along the interstate and a trucker pulled up, turned on his CB, and he goes, "Hey, UFO, if you got your ears on, come over this way." And the object actually moved over in his direction. So there's a
wow.
ton of stuff like this in the literature. And that's part of the reason I think, you know, Greer is a student of these cases as well. And he, I think, correctly divined that, you know, these craft have these acute attenuation to human thought and can pick it up and read it at a distance. So it's a fascinating area. I mean, that's the ultimate mind zoomer. That's the final frontier as far as I'm concerned, all this science of consciousness research, which gets into quantum entanglement, quantum physics. And, you know, if you want your mind blown with woo-woo or mysticism, just do some reading on consciousness and quantum mechanics, and it's a fascinating field. They quote, I hope, some of the best experts that are working in it throughout the book, and like I said, I think it's the final frontier.
In bringing this book out and examining all the different concepts that you did, was there still things that surprise you regarding this field of research?
You know, by the time I left CSETI in the late 90s and then in subsequent years, reading different accounts and new information, I really had seen so much and heard so much that I think by the year 2000, nothing anymore has surprised me, and I think I have to stick to that too. 21 years later, I welcome it, but I'm not really shocked or surprised by anything anymore. You know, whether it's real or it's just speculative, there's too much of it out there. In fact, one of my favorite quotes in the book is from 1927 by a guy named J.B.S. Haldane, a British geneticist and an evolutionary biologist, who said, "The universe is not only stranger than we suppose, but stranger than we can suppose." I mean, that pretty much sums it up for me, and that's pretty much where I leave it on the table.
Do you think that you will continue to have experiences because you're seeking knowledge, or because they have already chosen you and they continue to visit you because of that?
You are chosen. It's funny because in the book, at two different places, including the prologue, and then I think again later in the last chapter, I said, this is my farewell to ufology, my kiss off to the whole thing. You know, since I wrote those words, in completing the book, I've had a couple of events just this year in the last 6 months, including a sighting really close to my house, right over Highway 55, you know, Hiawatha Avenue.
Right.
In March. And it's funny because I was picking up Chinese food and I was waiting for the signal to turn left onto my street. And I, you know, kind of on the horizon against the skyscrapers downtown, I saw this object with about four or five portals, a whitish object, suddenly appear like a half mile away, and it went across the Hiawatha Avenue or Highway 55 and went off to the east. I tried to follow it, but the light changed, and I had people behind me, and I was also looking at other people in their cars. It was dark. It was, you know, it was late winter at that point. And I tried to see where it went, but I went, I, you know, I got back to the house and I told my wife, I said, oh, I just saw something that the boys upstairs pulled off. And that was, the boys upstairs is my chauvinistic euphemism for whatever these occupants are in these vehicles. I always refer to them as the boys upstairs. But the kicker on this, Dave, is that a few days later, I went over to Curtis A's house, the legendary rock and roll singer from here. And Kurt's been into this subject for a long time. He's written up in the same chapter as Owen Husney, the guy who discovered Prince. And I recount Kurt's what really seems like a fairly black and white hardcore abduction incident. Anyway, I went over to Kurt's house a few days after the sighting, and he's got all kinds of UFO memorabilia and books lying around his house, and I happened to pick up one on his coffee table. It was a collection of photographs that someone had compiled, and I'm paging through it, and I stop on one page, and I went, this is the thing I just saw 3 nights ago. There was an image of the same sort of craft right there on the page, four or five portals, whitish-looking, you know, saucer-shaped object, and I just closed the book, and I went, well, there you go. And we went on to another part of our conversation from that day. And then I had another incident, which I'm not going to get into because I'm still thinking about it, but it was very strange, and it had to do with family members, and maybe at some point when we meet in person, I'll tell it to you and maybe you'll have some insights into it.
I would love that opportunity. When I get back to Minnesota, we will definitely have to connect for a beer and a sandwich and get to know a little bit more about your experiences and stories. I'm sure Tim and I would love to have that happen. And please keep us in mind as more things unravel. And if you hear of any strange sightings in our great state, please let us know, because we'll have you back on at least on our new segment to fill us in on what the new story is and what's going on.
Yeah, I'm, you know, as an extension of the book, I've been blogging on the book's website, thespacepenclub.com, trying to post at least once a week, although I've fallen behind on that in the last couple of weeks. But I'm reporting a lot of analysis of the government report and then digging up some other stuff that I think will be of interest to people that I didn't have room to include in the book. There'll be some interesting things showing up there, and I might get into some of these personal things that have happened in the last year at some point as well. So thespacepenclub.com.
All right. We will include a link to that website as well so that you can find it and the book. Martin Keller, our guest. Martin, thank you so much for coming on with us today.
Hey, thanks. It's been fun. I hope it was coherent, and I look forward to seeing you guys in the flesh.
Hey, mind zoomers and all, it was perfectly coherent. So thank you very much for sharing your time with us. Folks, make sure you get the book, rate and review these books to help out the authors that are on the show. We do not have a live stream this week, folks. We may be a little bit off and on with that as I'm out filming a new TV program, and my schedules are quite hectic, especially at night, as I'm sure you can ascertain. But we will do a few from time to time. Make sure you are checking out our True Crime Tuesday that we've made available now on Tuesdays, so you can tune in and check it out. You'll get to hear the beginning parts of all the interviews for the Dumb Crime Stupid Criminal aspect. You need to be a subscriber to Stitcher Premium. $5 a month, that's all it takes. It'll get you all of Darkness Radio, all of True Crime Tuesday.
commercial-free and the complete episodes of True Crime Tuesday. Plus, you get all of the other fantastic programs under the Stitcher umbrella. That's it for today. We'll be back again next week with more of the best in paranormal and true crime talk radio. I'm Dave. That's Tim. This is Darkness Radio.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel. 5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel. 5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel. Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel. Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Lost Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
At CVS, it matters that we're not just in your community, but that we're part of it. it matters that we're here for you when you need us, day or night. And we want everyone to feel welcomed and rewarded. It matters that CVS is here to fill your prescriptions and here to fill your craving for a tasty and, yeah, healthy snack. At CVS, we're proud to serve your community because we believe where you get your medicine matters. So visit us at CVS.com or just come by our store. We can't wait to meet you. Store hours vary by location.